This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
One of the iconic moments of the campaign when he was a server at McDonald's, and an Indian American from India said something like, I'm nobody. And he said, you are somebody, you're not nobody. And that was extemporaneous.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Dr. Victor Davis Hansen, Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, author of a number of books, including the recently revised and re-released The Case for Trump and The End of Everything. We talk with Victor Davis Hansen today for some election analysis and insight. Dr. Hansen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Talking today about some analysis and insight following the 2024 election. And we talked prior to the election numerous times about the shape of the race, Dr. Hansen. After seeing what we saw and the results of November 5th, how did Trump do what he did? This great comeback, one of the greatest comebacks in political history, which you already had hinted at before November 5th, came to fruition when we got the results. How did Donald Trump do it, and how did he make himself more popular than he was just a couple of years ago?
Well, there was two things that were going on. One was what he did, and one what was done to him. And the latter was pretty clear. I think everybody agrees that there were three factors. One, the Biden administration under the leadership of Merrick Garland, it really did wage warfare against him. So the Fannie Willis, the Alvin Bragg, the Letitia James, the E. Jean Carroll, the Jack Smith indictment, civil or criminal, were seen by the general public that they would have never been brought had Trump, A, not run for office, or B, if there had been any other target. So they were considered lawful. The mugshot and things like that added to it. So there was a sense that he was being victimized and treated unfairly, and he was defiant in the process. And that kind of characterized the whole campaign. The moderators and the debates were biased. The assassination attempts, there were legitimate questions about the level of proper security, and he showed defiance through all of that. The second thing was that he was not running against his own record, which was good, but he was running against one of the worst presidential records in modern memory, that of Bill Biden, that gave us hyperinflation, no borders, 12 million illegal aliens, disasters in Afghanistan, humiliation, the Chinese balloon, the Middle East. The world was on fire. Crime, the destruction of our cities, et cetera, debt. And he was running against a very poor record. And then finally, Kamala Harris must have been the worst Democratic candidate since George McGovern. She had no confidence in extemporary press conferences, town halls, interviews. She could not do them. The manner in which she had been anointed without a convention, she'd never run in a primary in her life. The way that 14 million voters and Joe Biden were disposed of, that all of that channeled into Donald Trump. But then on the other hand, he was able to look at the political landscape and say, I don't really want to appoint people from the political establishment of the Republican Party, the Romney, Bob Dole, McCain, Bush wing is over with, and the constituents that promoted are over with. So I'm going to create, and he had tried it earlier, but I'm really going to double down on a National Workers' Party, Populist Party, that's going to replace class solidarity or racial tribalism. So he deliberately went into venues that no Republican would ever go.
Dr. Hansen, you mentioned the surge in support among African-American voters and Latino voters. It's one of the things the polls actually did predict before Election Day. No one really believed those polls, but it turned out they were true. How much do you accredit that to Donald Trump's outreach and his style of campaigning? And how much do you attribute to the fact that even those on the left after the election are admitting that Democratic governance in our big cities is an absolute disaster? People see the results of Democratic governance and are looking for another option.
Well, I give a lot of credit to Donald Trump because they had been derelict, they being liberal blue state governors and mayors. They had been derelict in 2016. They had been derelict in 2020. And yet they were getting 94% of the African-American votes, 55% of 60 the Latino vote. But what Donald Trump did is he flipped their vulnerability. So he came in and said, you may be Latino, but this border is destroying your community. You have to have English as a second language. You cannot have AP in your course. You have to hire more policemen. Your dialysis clinics are jammed down. He said that to African Americans. He said it to poor whites. He said it to Latino communities, especially in the border. And then he made the corollary argument that your blue state representative and the people you see on MSNBC, NBC, all the media, if you're a Hispanic or black, these people have as much in common with you as their white elite counterparts do, truck drivers and assembly workers in the Midwest that are white. And so you, all of you people, have something in common that transcends your race, and that is you're middle class and you're being ignored and destroyed by these people, but they don't like you. Oprah doesn't like you, and Kamala Harris doesn't like you in the same way that Joe Scarborough doesn't like you, mm-hmm. or Chris Matthews doesn't like you. And that was a very hard sell, but it really caught on, and that was why you saw 25% of black voters who were male voted for him, and almost 50% of Hispanic voted for him.
Dr. Victor Davis Hansen with us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, talking post-election analysis and insight. Perhaps we should take a moment and reflect and appreciate the sheer effort put in by Donald Trump on the campaign. He put the work in. Nothing was guaranteed to him about a second nomination. There were contenders. There were other Republican candidates who wanted that nomination. Donald Trump put the work in. Donald Trump went to various communities. Donald Trump asked voters for their support, perhaps those who had never been asked before by a Republican candidate for their support. This is a candidate who is near the same age as President Biden was when he started his term, but no one would confuse the two in terms of activity. Who do you think convinced Donald Trump to do this? Who are those advisors or people around him who perhaps deserve some of the credit as well as the candidate?
Well, I think the person who deserves the most credit is Susan Wild. She had been working for a lot of candidates in Florida, successfully so, and she understood the grassroots. And then he had a number of people, Miller and Tong and a lot of them around them, and they kept reiterating the message that you're not going to win unless you can get middle-class voters, and you've got to work and go out and court them and minority voters. Do not worry about the never-Trumpers. You're not going to bring into your cabinet a Mattis or the Rex Tillerson, and just forget all of that. They hate you. You're never going to win the change back. In fact, you want their anger at you. Mm-hmm. What you want to do is go into these communities, outwork Joe Biden. It was kind of damning in the last 2 weeks where Kamala Harris actually took a day off And then her campaign, for some reason, released pictures of her napping in the plane while this 78-year-old man was just sleeping 2 or 3 hours a day. And he picked out certain events that they had in, you know, the mixed martial arts thing, and then going into bodegas and of course, the famous McDonald's and the garbage truck stones. All of that was laughed off by the left. One of the iconic moments of the campaign when he was a server at McDonald's, and an Indian American from India said something like, I'm nobody. And he said, you are somebody, you're not nobody. And that was extemporaneous.
We'll pause there and pick up on that point in just a moment. Victor Davis Hanson is with us for 2024 election analysis and insight. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, friends. RC here with this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Don Pepin Original Exclusivos Nicaraguan Puro. Corojo Wrapper equals a Don Pepin Classic. Cubanesque in flavor, strength, and size, this is the stick to celebrate your latest victory. Get yours today at Tobacco & Brew, Redding, California.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hello, Northern California. This is Rollin with the Flag Center. With fire season clearly upon us, we're inviting you to join us in celebrating all police, firefighters, and first responders who keep us safe day and night through thick and thin. We salute you. The Flag Center keeps plenty of thin blue line and thin red line flags in stock. To get yours, stop by the Flag Center at 2124 Hilltop Drive or on the web at theflagcenter.com. Flags, flagpoles, and accessories since 1980.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Want to talk to Santa Claus himself?
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
That's right, folks. Santa will be live on the air December 12th from 6:05 to 7 p.m. Tune in to Heroes of the North State, hosted by Michelle Slade of My Umbrella Marketing. Tell Santa your Christmas wishes or just say hi. So mark your calendar for December 12th. Tell a friend and talk to Santa live while making magical memories. Call 530-605-4566 or 530-605-4567.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on the Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We continue our conversation with Dr. Victor Davis Hansen, Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College, Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution. Find more at victorhansen.com. Dr. Hansen, Democrats in the final days of the campaign made it a priority to attack Donald Trump in the most hyperbolic ways possible. But they were saying the same things they said about him last time, and some of the same things they said about Mitt Romney, and some of the same things they said about John McCain in past campaigns. It seemed that by the end, voters simply didn't believe anything that was coming from the left, that their words had lost meaning. Do you think there is now a trust gap between the parties, that many moderate, independent swing voters simply won't listen to messaging from the left at this point?
Well, absolutely. That whole Trump is a fascist, he's a Nazi, he's a dictator. It was unconvincing for so many reasons. People have seen him in office for 4 years, and he really didn't go after Hillary. He said she suffered enough. He really didn't weaponize the FBI, the CIA, the DOJ, the IRS in the way that Obama and Biden have done. And they knew that. So they thought, well, I've seen this guy. He's not a dictator. He's not a fascist. He's not a Nazi. And then they would say to themselves, well, why are you saying this? We don't want to hear that. We want to hear that the border isn't secure and you're going to do something about it. Or why we had hyperinflation, and they wouldn't do that. And so that was a sin of commission and omission. They said something that people innately knew was not true. It was borne out later when Biden had him into the White House yesterday, or Kamala Harris talked to him. People said, if he's a dictator and he's Hitler, why would you have him in the White House?
Mm-hmm.
But it was also a sin of omission, because when they fixated on that, they didn't talk about the issues and who she was and how she was different, if so, with Joe Biden, what was her plan in detail to govern. None of that was there. It was just Trump, 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 and it had the unintended effect of giving him more and more attention as someone who was unfairly the object of vituperation, lawfare, etc., made him even more sympathetic.
Dr. Victor Davis Hansen with us, Wayne and Marsha Buskey, Distinguished Fellow in History here at Hillsdale College. His recent books, including The Case for Trump, The Rivalry, and The End of Everything. Dr. Hansen, Donald Trump enters this second term as a president who is guaranteed no reelection campaign. He can't run again. He has 4 years and he is done. What do you make of the speed with which the Trump administration has to work to make good on some of these promises made during the campaign? What's the window, and do you think that they feel the urgency, again, to deliver on those promises?
Yeah, he's got about 2 years, because he is a lame duck, and people know that he will be, he's won a popular and the Electoral College, he's in control, but he's got to get the right people in there, and he's got to deliver on his promises. And he's got some real paradoxes, because he cannot bring in the Mattises and the Kellys and the Tillersons and all, nor can he bring in the Bannons and the Omarosa. He needs to get loyalists who are really going to cut government and bring change, radical change he promised. But some of them are going to be so non-traditional, like a Tulsi Gabbard or an RFK, but especially Matt Gaetz. He's going to have to decide which ones can be confirmed as quickly as possible and which ones the Senate Republicans in private will rebel against. Right now, I think there's only one, and that's Gaetz, that they will rebel against. But he's got to get the idea that these people are going to be merciless in the way that they cut government. And then I think it's also important that he's confronted with things abroad that are a mess. The Ukraine war is getting to it. I mean, when Biden just allowed Ukraine to use hypersonic weaponry against the homeland of Russia, it's going to be really tricky for Trump. So he's got to go in there, and he's got to tell the people, I mean, we're not going to get in endless wars like I said. But I'm going to have to use judicious force, as I did getting Soleimani or Baghdadi or ISIS out, or we're going to have no deterrence, and we're going to be in an endless war. And that's very hard to convince people that he's a Jacksonian and will strike, but he's not going to get bogged down in a quagmire. The same thing about the debt. I mean, he said no tax on Social Security, no tax on military people, first responders, police, no tax on tips, etc. And that's great. But when you add that to restoration of tax cuts, you're getting up to $1 trillion a year in lost revenue. So he's really going to have to convince people, I can cut $1 trillion and I can grow the economy so we'll get another $1 trillion or $2 in revenue, and then we can get on the trajectory that's going to balance the budget. So it's going to be tricky to pull off this renaissance, because he's got some contradictions in the people around him.
Final question for Dr. Victor Davis Hanson. Barack Obama, it was often said, was great at getting Barack Obama elected, but very bad at getting others elected, especially in the off-year elections. Barack Obama was good for Obama, not so good for the Democratic Party. Donald Trump has proven to be very good at getting Donald Trump elected. People, candidates who are emulating Trump's style and in some cases his messaging haven't been as successful thus far. Is there a way to turn that into a strength? Is there a way for Donald Trump to help others like him get elected in the midterms?
Yeah, I think there is. The message from the House races, and I think the Senate races, is if you embrace Donald Trump's message of creating a middle-class workers' party, a populist party, and you go after the establishment and the waste and the blue state model and the arrogance of the elite, and you're somebody like Sheehy in Montana, who's a veteran, or McCormick in Pennsylvania, or people who almost won like Rogers in Michigan, or Moreno in Ohio, then you're going to win. But if you are like Kerry Lake, and you come off as kind of eccentric, or you're, and I'm not disparaging, I think she would have been a much better candidate. She was would have been a much better senator than DeLego. But my point is that she came off as shrill, she came off as an election denialist. So she didn't really, she came off as a ultra-Trump person, but not necessarily an ultra-MAGA agenda. And I think that only Donald Trump can be Donald Trump. And when you try to get fiery and controversial, it doesn't work to the same degree. So get the message and be bold like he is and be unafraid of criticism, but don't get into these cul-de-sacs that she got into and a couple of other people did as well.
Dr. Victor Davis Hanson, Wayne and Marsha Buskey, Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College, Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, author of numerous books, including The Case for Trump and The End of Everything. Find more at victorhanson.com. Dr. Hanson, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate having you.
Up next, Stephen Gao Calabrese is with us. He'll tell us about his new book, The Mies Revolution, The Making of a Constitutional Moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So, what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world: family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
At Greg's Pump and Well Service, we believe integrity is the cornerstone of everything we do. This month, we proudly salute our armed forces and first responders, those who embody true service, dedication, and integrity. When you choose us for your pump and well needs, you're choosing a company that shares those same values. Thank you for your service. Let us serve you with pride. 530-282-5395. Call us at 530-282-5395. License 109-0355.
Get ready, rodeo fans. From December 4th to the 7th, we're bringing you live coverage straight from the National Finals Rodeo.
Tune in as we go behind the scenes with exclusive interviews featuring contestants, stock contractors, and even the president of the PRCA.
Whether you're a diehard fan or just love the excitement of the rodeo, you won't want to miss a second of the show.
Join us live from the National Finals Rodeo, December 4th through 7th from 7 to 9 a.m.
Brought to you by the Redding Rodeo Association and Redding Rancheria, bucking by the river.
Ed Robertson inviting you to join us for the next edition of TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on KCNR. Phil Grice will join us for our annual look at vintage Thanksgiving-themed programs from the 60s and 70s by way of the sounds of lost television. If you join us for that, that's TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, KCNR.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Join Tolkien's Radio Show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as hosts Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Tolkien's Radio Show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. You'll find older episodes of this program, plus all the great Hillsdale College audio we have available. We're joined by Stephen Gao Calabrese. He is a professor at Northwestern Pritzker School of Law, a visiting professor of law at Yale, and also the co-author of a new book with Gary Lawson. It's The Mises Revolution, The Making of a Constitutional Moment. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Should mention you also have the great opportunity to work with Ed Mises as a special assistant and also have served with him on the Federalist Society board for many years. So it is a subject which you know a lot about, but it's a subject that our audience might know all that much about. That's why we talk today, and we start with this question very briefly before we get deeper into it. Hey, who's Ed Mises, and why should we know about him?
Well, Ed Mises was basically President Ronald Reagan's right-hand man, and he was his closest friend during President Reagan's administration. He was chief of staff to Ronald Reagan's campaign in 1980, and was a key architect in helping President Reagan get elected in 1980. And then during President Reagan's first term, Ed Mises served as counselor to President Reagan and had a seat on the Reagan cabinet. And he was in charge of all policy decisions, essentially, both in national security and in domestic policy. During that period, Ed was on President Reagan's National Security Council for almost all 8 years of the Reagan administration, and he was a key architect of the foreign policy which led to a defense buildup and the winning of the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union. He was heavily involved in all aspects of domestic policy, including President Reagan's tax cut. And then in 1985, Ed Meese became the 75th Attorney General of the United States, and he served as Attorney General for the last 3.5 years of President Reagan's term. And he was a path-breaking figure as Attorney General, because he announced early in his tenure that he was going to follow originalism in running the Justice Department, and that the department would follow that approach to law in all the decisions it took, in the judges and Supreme Court justices it appointed, in the litigation it brought, and in all other matters. And he really is a revolutionary figure in law.
I want to kind of start chronologically, but much of the book is about his influence as Attorney General and his influence on the originalist movement in law. But there's also about a third about his influence and work inside the Reagan administration. So I wanted to start there. You say that Meese is associated with every great thing Ronald Reagan did. How did Ed Meese, as Attorney General, become such a trusted confidant and become such an integral part of the Reagan administration and the Reagan policymaking?
Well, it goes back to 1966 when Ronald Reagan was elected governor of California. And Reagan ran for governor of California in 1966 on a policy of getting tough on the campus radicals at Berkeley. And Ed Meese at the time was a prosecutor in Berkeley, and he had arrested 700 students who'd occupied a university hall and had prosecuted a bunch of them. And Reagan was so intrigued that he interviewed Ed and offered him a job. And then Ed worked with Governor Reagan for, I think, 8 years during Reagan's tenure as governor of California, and they became extremely close personal friends. Ed was then chief of staff to Ronald Reagan's 1976 presidential bid, where Reagan narrowly lost the Republican nomination to Gerald Ford, and then he was chief of staff to Reagan's 1980 presidential bid, which, of course, that election he won in a landslide over Jimmy Carter. Ed was centrally involved in key campaign decisions. He brought in Bill Casey to help run the 1980 Republican campaign, and Bill Casey then served as director of the CIA under Reagan and was a key architect of Reagan's foreign policy. Ed advised President Reagan on picking a running mate and urged him to pick the first President Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, because he was the best and most conservative of the various possibilities that Reagan was considering. And so he entered the White House with just an enormous reservoir of trust on President Reagan's part. And the two of them knew each other so well that they could start telling a story and each of them could finish the story themselves because they knew the ending to it. they just really had a complete mind meld. And President Reagan just trusted Ed on everything. And the staffer who advised Ed on the National Security Council said that whenever there was a disagreement on the National Security Council, President Reagan always sided with Ed Meese. And certainly whenever there was any issue of legal policy, when Ed was Attorney General, Reagan always backed up Ed Meese. And on various domestic policy matters, Reagan listened to Ed Meese. Mm-hmm. And
Talking with Stephen Gao Calabrese, the new book is The Mies Revolution, The Making of a Constitutional Moment. And this moment that begins the introduction of the book is the speech at the ABA in July of 1985. Before we talk about that, briefly explain to us, what was the legal world like prior to this speech by Ed Mies and prior to this introduction of original intention, the jurisprudence of original intention? What was he speaking out against at that point?
So the legal world before 1985 was dominated by justices who believed that they should make good policy decisions and that the meaning of the Constitution was essentially indecipherable because it was worded so generally. And so the job of a Supreme Court justice was to make a good policy decision. And during the Warren Court era from 1954 to 1969, the policy making was very left wing. Under President Nixon's appointees, the Berger Court from 1969 until 1986, when Chief Justice Rehnquist came in, the Berger Court was still making policy, but in a somewhat more conservative direction. The Berger Court was more conservative on criminal law matters, but on other matters, it did some radically left-wing things. It was the Berger Court that Nixon appointed that in 1973 fabricated out of thin air a right to abortion in Roe versus Wade. And that was something Reagan and Mies were very opposed to, and of which they laid the seeds for its eventual overruling, happily, in 2 years ago in Dobbs against Jackson Women's Health Center.
Mm-hmm.
So the legal landscape before Ed Mies was such that the word originalism was never mentioned once or practically at all. If you do Lexis and Westlaw searches or searches of law review articles, you'll find only a smattering of references to originalism, and none of them are really references to a jurisprudence of original intention,
mm-hmm.
or a come to be called a jurisprudence of original meaning.
Stephen Gao Calabrese is with us. His book, The Mies Revolution. We'll come back in just a moment and talk more about the big footprint of Edwin Mies III. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Celebrate Thanksgiving at Black Bear Diner. Skip the hassle and let us cook for you. Enjoy home-style turkey, slow-roasted prime rib, and smoked ham with all the trimmings. Join us Thanksgiving Day for dine-in, carry-out, or delivery. Make your holidays special at Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Black Bear Diner.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300 a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Now, this is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Check us out on X. We're at Hillsdale Radio for updated guest information and show notes. We continue now with Stephen Gao Calabresi, co-author of a new book, The Mies Revolution, The Making of a Constitutional Moment. Stephen, I want to ask for a little more clarification or at least discussion on that. There's a part in Chapter 5 that discusses this idea of originalism versus judicial restraint because people still don't understand it today, media members, legal commentators, the idea that originalism essentially means judges shouldn't ever strike down laws. They shouldn't intervene. They should lay back for the most part and let things happen. And that's not exactly what originalism means. Can you discuss that a little bit more in depth?
Judicial restraint is an argument that judges should simply rubber stamp anything that the government does. And it was developed by a Harvard law professor, James Bradley Thayer, in 1893, because at the time the federal courts were conservative and were in favor of free markets, and they were striking down some progressive and socialist innovations. So judicial restraint got its start really as a liberal idea, and some of Franklin Roosevelt's Supreme Court justices, like Felix Frankfurter and Stanley Reed, and even Robert Jackson, followed judicial restraint. And President Nixon picked up on the language of judicial restraint because the Warren Court had become a very active policymaker in the 1960s. But Reagan and Meese thought that the job of the court was not to rubber stamp what the government does. It was to interpret and apply the Constitution. And if the Constitution left the matter up to the government to regulate, like abortion, and the court should let the government regulate that matter. But if the Constitution protected a right, like the right to the free exercise of your religion, or the right not to have your property taken except for a public use and with just compensation being paid, then the court should enforce that right. And basically the Reagan-Meese theory was that the Supreme Court and the federal courts below the Supreme Court should follow the law and should be law-abiding. And where the law disallowed something, they should strike the law down. And where the law permitted a government action, they should uphold the government action. And it really is a simple belief in the supremacy of law and the idea that judges are supposed to follow and interpret the law, not make it and not rubber stamp government attempts to avoid it.
Stephen Gao Calabresi is with us. The book, The Mies Revolution, The Making of a Constitutional Moment. Again, the speech in July 1985 in front of ABA, talking about the jurisprudence of original intention. And it's one thing to lay it out and one thing to sort of say, hey, this is the way we should be thinking about cases. This is the way we should be thinking about legal arguments. It's something else to put it into action. What did Mies do and how did he act to actually lay out and, I don't want to say implement necessarily, but make this a new and coherent philosophy?
Well, what Ed did as Attorney General was absolutely extraordinary. And I would compare it to General Dwight Eisenhower's invasion of Normandy on D-Day. He basically fought on multiple different fronts. One thing he did that was tremendously important was that he picked originalist Supreme Court justices and judges. And he therefore ensured that originalism would be represented on the life-tenured federal courts for long after the Reagan administration. And, you know, it's really Ed who was most responsible for picking Antonin and Scalia for the Supreme Court. I don't think if Ed hadn't been Attorney General that Justice Scalia would have been picked. And, of course, Justice Scalia went on during his tenure as a justice to be a very primary and public defender of originalism, and he wrote lots of originalist opinions. Ed also was behind the appointment of William Rehnquist to be Chief Justice, and Chief Justice Rehnquist was much more sympathetic to originalism and originalist outcomes than his predecessor, Chief Justice Berger. Ed appointed a whole slew of lower federal court judges who were originalists, and he also gave probably 30 very important speeches on originalism in particular areas of law, and he spelled out what originalism would lead to as to the free exercise clause of the First Amendment, the establishment clause of the First Amendment, the takings clause that protects private property in the Fifth Amendment, the Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures, and in the separation of powers and in federalism. Ed was a huge champion of both the separation of powers and federalism because they're a way of dividing government power and limiting government power. And he helped usher in a revival on the Supreme Court of Supreme Court enforcement of the separation of powers and of federalism. And he really is the father or grandfather of the Roberts Court majority. He laid the groundwork for a seismic change in how law is interpreted. And when he became Attorney General, there were essentially no prominent law professors defending originalism in the academy. Today, there are probably 300 or 400. And originalists are still a minority in the academy, but they're a majority in the federal courts. And even the left is forced to engage in originalism to try to counter our arguments. They make bad historical arguments and bad textual arguments to try to mimic originalism and to try to get the policy results they want from the federal courts.
I talked with Randy Barnett a few months ago when his memoir was released, and I asked him this question, and I'll ask you this question, which is there a coherent legal philosophy on the left that exists to challenge originalism? Is there something brewing on the left that would rise to be a challenge to the originalist way of thinking?
The only serious challenge that has been made has been by former Justice Stephen Breyer, who has a new book out. And Justice Breyer argues that judges should be pragmatists and they should look at text, history, precedent, and policy considerations, and they should produce opinions that lead to the best public policy. So essentially what Justice Breyer argues is that the job of a Supreme Court justice or a judge is not really different from the job of a senator or a congressman. They're supposed to decide cases to produce good public policy. But the fact is that judges have life tenure. They're not up for re-election every 2 or 6 years. And they weren't designed to be policymakers. They were designed by the framers of the Constitution to be interpreters of the law and to apply the law. And judges are not very good policymakers for a whole bunch of reasons. Mm-hmm. They don't travel home to their districts to talk to constituents. They don't hold oversight hearings where they hear from experts on the policy consequences of things. They live a very monastic life where they can't discuss their cases with anyone outside of their colleagues and their law clerks. The only information they receive about the outside world comes in briefs, which are highly stylized and limited in the information they can obtain. And the reason judges live in that world is because they were never supposed to be pragmatic policymakers. They were supposed to be interpreters and appliers of the text of the Constitution. That's the only alternative theory that's really out there on the left, and it's a kind of non-theory. And that's one of the reasons why originalism is winning and winning and winning again, because you know, the left just doesn't have a counter theory, and it takes a theory to beat a theory.
Stephen Gao Calabrese is professor at Northwestern Pritzker School of Law, visiting professor of law at Yale, and co-author with Gary Lawson of the new book, The Mises Revolution, The Making of a Constitutional Moment. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you very much, Scott, for having me. It's an honor.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Victor Davis Hansen with Election Insight and Analysis, and Stephen Gao Calabrese, his book, The Mises Revolution. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Join Shasta College Saturday and Sunday, December 7th and 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Shasta College Farm for their annual Country Christmas Fair and Tree Sale. They have a wide variety of trees to choose from. And come and get your Christmas shopping done early with handcrafted gifts, plus proceeds will benefit Shasta College students. In addition to shopping, you can enjoy the free family fun activity with a bounce house for the kids and a petting zoo, too. It's all happening at the Shasta College Farm. Bring 6 non-perishable canned food items and receive $3 off one tree. Canned food will be donated to the Good News Rescue Mission.
Riverfront Playhouse presents Gaslight Theater's Christmas Vacation by Catherine Burns and Mike Urema, with musical arrangements by Josh Lamoureux, directed by Aaron Stewart. See this delightful musical comedy set in a small town where Mark Grimsworth aims to create the ultimate Christmas for his family while maintaining his streak in the annual Holiday Lights Contest. Tickets available at riverfrontplayhouse.net. Gaslight Theater's Christmas Vacation, November 29th through December 15th. Sponsored by this station and these Pro Arts businesses.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.